right now, it's time for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with Scott Washington, awesome historian who joins us here now in the studio. How are you?
Well, I can say the same thing about you, Aaron. You're a Renaissance man who knows so many different dimensions of history and keeping our airwaves so interesting as well with great music and great interviews.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. And well, we're done, everyone. Good night.
This is part of history, too. People are going to look back and say, who were these people that were on the air?
What were they doing?
Yes,
why
were they
doing it?
That's right. This is why Charles Kuralt started at this station.
Yes.
Yeah, and WCHL.
Well, that he was here. You
yes,
know,
yeah, like, exactly.
If he wasn't in Chapel Hill, he would have started at some other station.
That's
but
right.
He started here. And
yeah,
launched himself to greatness
rights.
And glory.
That's
yeah.
right. Well, I was thinking about that today because today is World Voice Day. And let me see when the specific day is this week. And that's to acknowledge the power of voice. It's actually on April 16th.
Awesome.
And it's a worldwide event that takes place to acknowledge the importance of word. And I can't think of a better place that does that and celebrates that, that practices that than WCHL and has for decades. And certainly this, it's unique in the nation. So I'm just gushing with compliments today because it's about history.
I love
it. And it's because history is not only in the immediate. And, of course, there are so many things happening, current events, that sometimes our heads are spinning going, oh, my gosh, what happened today? We don't have to get into that. It's just one of those things that would, in fact, I would get excited about things 250 years ago.
I was going to say, we can still look back in history and have our heads spin and go, what happened today in history? Because
that's right.
So much.
Exactly. But, you know, and despite everything that goes on in the world, that we hear sometimes the reporting of the most disruptive events, but there's a lot of good that happens too. And in fact, in a nation of 326 million people, there's a lot more good stories happen every single day that don't always get reported. But
it's 100%.
That's
true.
Right.
Yeah.
And we celebrate some of these here on this show too, in addition to some of the other events. But here's one: April 20th, 1920, the Grand Canyon is formally dedicated as a national park.
Yep.
So, of course, my natural question was, what were they doing before then?
Before then, right? Yeah.
Well,
was there a debate in Congress,
is
it really national park worthy?
Should we
fill it in
with, you know, a big pool, something like that? No. But, you know,
this is just a scheme by Big Hole to make more money.
But that is one of the power of, you know, we think of government, it's not somewhere else. It's somewhere saying we need to preserve this for future generations. And that's part of history, too. And that's what we try to do, is save history by celebrating these moments.
And history means natural history as well as human history.
That's a very important
point.
Yes, thank you for that as well. There's some other things that happened this week. One that I think is kind of, I think we've talked about this before. 1876, the first U.S. fire pole was installed in New York City.
I think we have had this conversation once before, yeah.
How did they get down before then?
Yes.
Jump through that hole
Floor? Jump through land. Like, wow, all right, let's go.
That's right. Use the slide. I don't know. But, but it's nice to know that there really was a time when somebody said, this is a faster way to do it. I remember one time when I was up in Massachusetts, and there was a fire at the side of the road, and the fire station was right across the street. So I just walked in, and I said, I'd like to report a fire. And the fire chief, why didn't you call? I said, it's right over there.
Huh.
And what was amazing, he mashed his emergency button within 30 seconds. Guys were down the pole, literally, on the truck and across the street. I was impressed. Didn't even spend time talking to
him. I appreciate the fact that there are so many different ways of getting from one level of a building to another, right? There are stairs, there's escalators, elevators, ramps, sort of climbing down the wall a la the rock climbing wall that they have at the wellness center, and fire poles. The fire pole doesn't exist anywhere else, right? There
That's
are very few other places besides fire stations where they have the poles. And you would think that this would be a useful thing to have in other places as well. But no, it's specifically fire poles.
That's true.
Or fire stations.
That's a good point. We've addressed all of these issues in terms of how to move people up. Usually you don't have them going up the fire pole.
Right,
it's usually just coming down.
Just coming down, yeah. Going up would be a much, much harder
yes.
Thing to accomplish.
That's right. So, and then there are the things that happened this week that are really fun and important. let's see, Thursday, today, April 18th, 1775, is when Paul Revere makes his famous ride announcing the arrival of the British, mm-hmm. going out to Lexington and Concord. And then, of course, tomorrow is the shot heard round the world, fired at Lexington Commons, which typically is when people say the American Revolution started. Mm-hmm. But as we know, it kind of is a long process.
And there were several years leading up to this
as
well.
Yes, North
right?
Carolina has its part in all this as well.
With the regulators, yeah.
Yes,
and Hillsborough
exactly.
has its part
exactly.
in it.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Orange County.
So that's really an important part of that. In fact, as you said, Hillsborough, well, I've got to mention this one truly amazing thing. And that is when the Bill of Rights, the first 12 amendments were going out, and they got a necessary amount. They had to be ratified by the states in 1791. And when Virginia ratified 10 of 12, or ratified all of them, but 10 of 12 that the other states filled that majority mm-hmm. That was required, those first 10 become the Bill of Rights. Well, and then you go 150 years later, and in 1939, somebody realized, gee, you know, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Georgia didn't actually ratify them back when they were going, is this a good time to correct that? And so belatedly, yes, they did. And
just sort of filling in that gap there.
That's right. I mean, they were operative, but it was like, okay, let's just kind of make sure. Now that we've had enough time to kind of make sure that they work. And so Connecticut... on April 19th, 1939.
It is interesting that it was those three states, right? Massachusetts
yes.
and Connecticut and Georgia. And I mean, I was reading, I think we were talking about this
yeah.
last year. I read a couple of books about the Constitutional
yes.
Convention and the ratification
oh
debate. And the argument for a Bill of Rights
yes.
really gets a foothold in Massachusetts.
That's
because
right.
the Anti-Federalists were very, very strong in Massachusetts.
Yes.
There was a movement that could have potentially prevented Massachusetts from voting for ratification. And it was John Hancock and Samuel Adams who were the two kind of leaders of the state who came together and forged the compromise of, okay, we'll vote for ratification, but we'll recommend amendments. We'll
right.
recommend a Bill of Rights. And that catches on,
that
and that's ultimately what leads to the Bill
one.
Of Rights.
Oh.
And then Massachusetts doesn't even bother to ratify the Bill of Rights
well,
that they started.
Yes, but the Constitution, the main body, had been ratified, and the 11 of the 13 states had ratified it. They only need 9 in 1788.
Right.
So it went into effect, the Constitution, but the amendments that were passed over that summer of 1789 and going into the fall of 1789, when they went out for ratification, it took still 2 years, but that's, of course, when North Carolina makes this point. But civil liberties was a big deal
yeah.
across the colonies. And, in fact, James Airedale at the convention here in Hillsborough, when they came to Article 5, which allows for amending, thought that was the most important because it allowed... the addition of these other things as
yep.
they came up. And
yeah.
I think time has proven that to be the case.
That is the most American government thing for Massachusetts to do. Like, we're going to launch this project that everyone in America has to get on board with, and then we're just going to step back and let someone else take care
of
it.
Well, this is why James Mason was, Madison was saying, you know, maybe we should be thinking, George Mason was thinking about, shouldn't we be having something about a Bill of Rights? But all the other states had Declaration of Rights
right,
of some variety. It only became down to, well, which one are we going to operate under if there are cases of law? And that's why those first 10. But then there have been so many other amendments, 13th, 14th, 15th,
yep.
19th, 26th.
And some disputes over the ratification of those, too,
yes.
right? So like Mississippi didn't ratify the 13th Amendment until
yes.
the 90s, I
yes.
think, if I remember right.
Well, again, it was a catching
was
up because it was like,
kind of,
that's right. It's going into force. It had enough votes. But now let's catch up with history and
yep.
be on the right side of history, which is... an important thing.
Yep.
Speaking of on the right side of history, on April 15th, 1960, about 150 student leaders from across the Southeast from 10 states met at Shaw University in Raleigh for the Southwide Leadership Conference on Nonviolent Resistance to Segregation, just 2 months after the Woolworth sit-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because Ella Baker, who was a Shaw graduate, was the person coordinating that. And those... they're called the SNCC, but SNCC protesters. These students were on the forefront of doing sit-ins and being nonviolent and risking their lives in many cases. Really important stuff. So that's another connection. Now, here's one that's a little bit unusual, but and it's a Western reference. In 1846, we've all probably heard about the doomed Donner Party that set out from Illinois on April 16th, 1846. When they did, they didn't know that they would be hitting blizzards going into the mountains. And, of course, you know, it ended with tragedy. Well, the people who headed this up, George and Jacob Donner, were Rowan County natives from here in North Carolina. But there is one kind of heroic kind of thing, and that's when the rescuers did come, one of the wives refused to leave her husband who was dying from an infected wound. And, you know, I think that says something about that that heroism can exist even in very difficult circumstances.
Yeah. Speaking with Scott Washington, we've got time for one more, and let's make it Bennett Place, because that was this week.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes, thank you. April 17th, 1865. You know, we all think of it, we've heard of Appomattox. April 9th, 1865, that's the end of the Civil War. No, it wasn't. That's when Lee surrendered. But the way the Confederacy organized their armies was fairly freewheeling, and there were other armies out in the field, including General Joe Johnson, who, like in a Greek myth, had fought William Sherman repeatedly, never got completely defeated, met him in the eastern part of the state. They come into here, and then that Confederate army is camped out in the Hillsborough area. Sherman's in the Raleigh area. Sherman sends word, let's meet on the 17th. The 16th was Easter, and he sent out word on Monday, Thursday, like today, and it goes out. But Lincoln, of course, is at the theater on the 14th. He's shot and dies on the 15th. That news gets down to here. It finally, a telegraph operator signals just as Sherman is going out to meet Johnson. He swears the telegraph operator's secrecy, meets Johnson at Bennett Place, and the first person he tells this news to is Joe Johnson, who was the highest-ranking officer of the Union Army to cross over to the Confederacy, who instantly realizes this is a catastrophe for the South. And these two generals, who are tired of war and are ready to have this end, hammer out an agreement, and we'll tell you what happens in the next couple of weeks. But that's a kind of a cliffhanger to say, but there's more yet.
Yes. And that is History Matters for this week. Much more to come next week, as always. There always is. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Aaron.